we, for the agenda today, we're going to introduce, I think it's just one bill, Paul, on film and video, the governor's program on that. So we'll introduce that as soon as one more member appears besides Senator Monroe and myself. And we'll move SJR 3 and SB 48. And, Paul, I believe we have the amendments to those are out on that table. And, yes, we should. They're ready to go. Great. So as soon as we, again, when there's more than two of us, we'll do that one too. But to keep us busy, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 44 and then just close it and move the bills when members arrive. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 44. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 44 allows the Department of Education to make matching grants to school districts for capital costs out of the subaccount in the Education Stability Fund. As you recall, when the Education Stability Fund reaches 5% of the general fund, money then flows into the capital subaccount, and the subaccount then would be allocated out based upon the language in Senate Bill 44. It would require school districts to apply and to have secured capital funding for their capital projects. The bill specifically limits grants to no more than 20% of the capital costs and has language that would make grants inversely proportional to a district's assessed value per student. And it would take effect July 1, 2009. On the revenue impact statement, you have the numbers in terms of what is expected to be into the flow into the capital subaccount by biennium starting sometime in probably late 09 or 11, which would make funds then available for distribution. I've attached two sheets to that. One is the language that's referred to in the bill for the definition of construction and maintenance in ORS 327-300. This is language that's been in the statute since 1993, and it basically set up a school facility improvement fund at that time, but there was never any money in it to distribute. The other page is constitutional language. If you look at the on the left side column down at 8A, that's just language that creates the school capital matching subaccount. And in sub C, it says, for the purpose of providing state matching grants to school districts for capital costs incurred by the school districts. So I thought you would perhaps want to have that available.
Thank you. Yeah, that is good to have and becoming much more relevant by the moment.
Questions?
Yeah, Senator Monroe.
So this could be used for reclamation projects, restoration projects of older buildings?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, yes. The definition of maintenance includes repairing, replacement, and other capital maintenance improvements, but excludes cleaning, is the language.
Let me see if I understand how this works. I mean, of course, there's no money in the fund yet.
Correct.
You know, there may be in the future, but you said it would be distributed in inverse order of their property tax evaluation per pupil?
Yes.
So the poorest districts would get, poorest districts being poor, meaning in lowest in assessed value per pupil, would get priority.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, yes, I believe that's the way the Department of Education would have to administer it.
But it only provides at the maximum 20%.
Yes, and so the district with the lowest assessed value per student would potentially qualify for a full 20%. Other districts, lesser percent, and it's not clear whether every district would have to get something.
But districts with a very low property tax evaluation per pupil have the most difficulty getting a capital bond passed, generally. And they would still have to get a capital bond passed to qualify for this grant. Isn't that true?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, yes, it would take some prior approval of our funding mechanism, probably a bond.
Okay, well, I'm not sure this really fixes anything then, but anyhow.
Mr. Reeder.
Chair Deckard, Senator Monroe, for the record, Brian Reeder with the Department of Education. This morning really wanted to just make some general comments about the bill. The first one is that it's rather short on specifics, leaves a great deal of the details up to the rulemaking process and up to the Department of Revenue. And so I guess one idea that I would like to express is that those details are rather important, and the discussion about those details maybe ought to take place in this type of setting rather than in a rulemaking setting. And the second point is that this program or this capital matching approach really leaves a lot of uncertainty out there, both for the department in administering the program and for school districts in terms of how much money they could expect from this type of grant. And I think Senator Monroe makes a very good point. Districts have to arrange financing prior to applying for this grant, and given the uncertainty about how much the grants will be, it's very difficult potentially for districts to go to their voters and say, well, we're asking you for $50 million, but we might get some money from the state, so it might be less than $50 million, and we might be able to give you some back. Mm-hmm. So there's a great deal of uncertainty when districts go out to ask their voters for funding. Now, presumably, one of the advantages of a capital matching program is you can say to your voters, the state is kicking in some money, and that provides an incentive for districts to pass a bond because they don't pay the full amount themselves. But when there's this much uncertainty about how much the grant will be, it's not clear whether that provides a very good incentive. One thing that we have discovered in the program we now run for grants for local option levies is that it's very valuable for the districts to be able to say to their voters, for every dollar that we raise locally, the state will kick in 40 cents. If they can't say that, that type of statement provides very clear information to voters about what they can expect. In this program, as it currently is designed, there's uncertainty about how much money will be in the sub-account. From 1 year to the next, there's uncertainty about how much will be available to a given school district because it would need to be spread over all districts who apply for the program. So there's just a lot of uncertainty in this type of program. Having said that, the department is in support of providing capital funding for school districts. What we see out there is a great deal of unmet maintenance needs, and clearly, as Senator Monroe points out, some of the lower property value districts have the hardest time passing bonds to build new buildings or repair existing buildings. So there appears to be a great need out there for both maintenance money and new construction money. My personal belief is that we could design a capital matching program that provides more certainty and therefore would be more effective than this type of approach.
You, the department, could.
Yes. You know, clearly in collaboration with the legislature.
So if we do nothing, with the Education Stability Fund hitting its 5% cap, with the current regime we have in place with the capital matching grant, what would occur if this legislature basically takes a pass on this discussion?
Chair Deckard, and maybe Steve can jump in here too, I don't know that there's anything in law currently that says how money in the capital matching subaccount is to be spent, and so I don't think we have any guidance at all on how that would happen, and it may be that without legislation that it can't be spent at all.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that. As far as what I know, and there's nothing in the statute to deal with a distribution process. There's nothing in the Constitution that says how money flows out of that capital subaccount.
So we just have a way to capture it and no clear way to allocate it.
Correct.
Right. And Chair Deckard, Steve made an interesting point this morning to me as well, is that it's potentially the legislature could take that money in a scenario where the money in the stability fund needs to be used for operating purposes in a recessionary period, that the legislature could go into the subaccount and take that money back and put it back into the stability fund to be used for operating purposes. So it's not, apparently, in Steve's estimation, it's not clear in the constitutional language that that money is forever dedicated for capital purposes. It may be reclaimed into the stability fund.
It
so that, you know, introduces even more uncertainty about how much would be available for this type of capital matching program.
Steve.
Mr. Chair, to me it wasn't clear. I think the intent, though, is probably that once it gets into the subaccount, that it stay in the subaccount. I mean, it would be up to the legislature to make that decision. But given the language in the bill, there's language that says the funds are continuously appropriated to the department. And so with the bill, I think that would clarify that funds in the subaccount go to the department and the possibility of their reverting back into the regular account wouldn't exist.
Do you know if this, and Brian, I don't know if you've been sitting on this work group in the House. We've been trying to coordinate the school capital conversation. We were going to pick up, and this committee will look at a couple bills in the coming weeks around school capital. But I guess I'm getting at your point of we need one point of coordination, because if we're going to do two or three legislative routes, it would be nice to end up with a well-defined allocation process. Do you know if that I don't know if you've been participating in that House group. Have not.
Chair Deckard, I haven't, but I think you make a great point, is that, you know, there are an unlimited number of ways you could design a capital matching program, and it would be, I think, a very good thing if we worked on it all together and had one point where those discussions took place rather than
bill here, bill there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the department has, I would welcome if the superintendent has some strong feelings, or even better, not strong feelings on how we should structure this school capital. I certainly would welcome kind of getting the bills together that we're considering, and we're going to, I think it's O10 that we're projected to hit the stability fund cap, and so it'd be nice to have that structure in place.
You know, Chair Deckard, the department would be happy to participate in that kind of process.
Great. Chair. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, just a couple comments. I've been around the school finance game for a long time, since before Measure 5, and it used to be that there was a great disparity between school districts, poor to wealthy districts, in terms of their overall operations budget and their ability to go to taxpayers and get appropriate funding. Now that the state has pretty well taken over funding through the formula after Measure 5 and Measure 50, there has been a considerable equalization in terms of operational dollars, although wealthy districts still have the opportunity to go out for a special bond, short-term bond, to supplement what they get. But the capital problem is a very, very serious problem. You have districts that have capital needs. Say they need $50 million to build a new building in a wealthy district, $50 million in a poor district. The homeowner in the poor district may be hit with 10 times as high or more bill than the homeowner for an equal amount in the wealthy district. So capital is becoming an absolute increasingly critical need in a lot of growth districts especially, and even in some non-growth districts that just need to maintain their buildings. 20% that you might get if you pass your bond, I don't think it's going to be enough of an incentive to cause strapped homeowners to divvy up the big pile of money in a poor district that's necessary to build that new building. I mean, I'd prefer to see it 50% and see it guaranteed money if you pass your bond, and see it allocated on the basis of need, poorest districts first. That the bill says that, and I like that. But I don't think this fund is ever going to be big enough where we can pay for all the capital needs across the board. So let's do something with it that really makes a difference. I just don't think 20% is going to be enough of an incentive to cause the folks in my district, which is one of the poorest districts in the state, to vote for, you know, for a bond. They love their schools. They have a wonderful school system. David Douglas School System is a wonderful school system. It's extremely well run. It's extremely efficient. Wonderful programs, but they're very poor people, and they're very, very poor. I think second poorest in the state in terms of property tax evaluation per pupil. Mm-hmm. And they lost their bond. And, I can sympathize with the voters because they're being asked for a big chunk of money anytime that bond goes out because of the economic situation. There are other districts that are in a similar situation. So if we're going to create rules for this prospective money that we hope will come in someday, I think we need to make sure that we think those rules through very carefully, and we need your help.
Thank you. Good point, Senator Monroe.
I think that was a speech, not a question.
and Brian didn't draft this bill.
You didn't raise your voice at the end of it to put a question mark on there.
I'll work on that.
Or any, would you care to comment on that? That's the great way to end a speech with a Mr. Reeder. We appreciate your time and appreciate your help on this.
Thank you.
So I think that's what I'll ask to do is perhaps if the superintendent, if you get a chance to ask her if she would like to, and Paul, we can maybe bring together, because I know we're going to go into a school capital conversation in about 10 days on our work schedule in this committee. So it'd be nice to be somewhat coordinated.
Great.
Thank you. Anyone else on Senate Bill 4-4? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 44. And let's introduce LC 2627. So I open a work session, Paul, correct? And we'll.
Yes, a work session.
Okay. Open a work session for a possible introduction of LC 2627, which is our very successful Oregon Production Investment Fund.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move introduction of LC 2627 as a committee bill.
Senator Starr has
the request of other
things. Thank you. Has moved the introduction of LC 2627 as a committee bill at the request of Governor, says Theodore here, Theodore R. Kulongoski. Feel free to put Tad if LC wants to. Any discussion of Senator Starr's motion? Any objections? So ordered. Open a work session on SJR 3, and we have before us a letter. The president of OHSU had at least called my office and indicated that he wanted to come down and lend his support, but he has a letter that all of us should have in front of us. And Paul, we have the amendment that you have worked very hard on, and Joan, if you're out there in legislative council, we know you've worked really hard on the amendment to 48 and SJR 3.
Mr. Chair, I'll start out with SJR 3, and you have before you a -2 amendment to SJR 3. As you recall, this was initially an amendment to essentially eliminate the 2% surplus kicker, and then under those conditions it would have been retained in the general fund, but there was an accompanying statutory measure that would have put it in the Education Stability Fund. What this amendment does is it changes the changes where the excess will be directed, and it redirects it into a rainy day saving account. And that's, you can see on the bottom of page one there of the dash two amendment. So it refers to a generic rainy day account. And of course, the reason for using the general language is that this is an amendment to the Constitution and not a revision. So you're not creating a rainy day fund within the same measure. As you recall, SJR 8 did that, that you looked at, and that was a constitutional revision. So this is referring to a generic rainy day fund. The other changes are at the end on page 3. It just changes the date for the SJR. It makes it applies it to the 0507 biennial calculation for the corporate 2% surplus kicker credit. And then it refers the measure to a special election, and you'll have Senate Bill 549 on your agenda for Monday, which is the companion election bill. Given the current forecast, the December forecast, we would anticipate that this measure would direct $275 million in the 07-09 biennium. I will tell you that just looking at the collections, the net collections that have come in through December, corporate revenue is running above that December forecast. So we would anticipate that number could easily be higher when you have the March 1 forecast released. Also keep in mind that, that we can forecast whatever we want. The key is on this calculation is done in August following the biennium, and that's what will determine the actual amount that would be deposited in the rainy day fund under if SJR 3 is approved. The other thing I would say, and I refer to this in the revenue impact statement, is that we have an extended history now of dealing with the corporate kicker, going back to the 79-81 biennium. And if you look out over the long horizon, and I've incorporated those times, such as 93 when the legislature suspended the corporate kicker, included those, you have on average 0.71% of general fund revenue going out as a corporate kicker, which is a number by any of them, not zero. But 0.71%, for example, looking out at 09-11, would be about $110 million. So it would be a significant long-run source. It just would occur very unevenly. Would be deposits into the fund.
So there is a little irony here that the forecast of 275, we can't count on that forecast, which is the nature of the corporate kicker. Maybe I'm the only one that gets that irony.
The nature of corporate income tax revenue, yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Astar.
Can I move the amendment?
Yes, please.
Move the dash 2 amendment to SJR 3.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 2 amendment to SJR 3. Discussion or questions for Paul?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Paul, Section 14A2, section is repealed January 1, 2009. Explain that to me.
Senator Monroe, that's just a reference to that beginning date. So I think what council wants to do is pull those dates out of the Constitution once we pass those dates and they're no longer relevant. So that's just to give direction as to when it starts. But once it starts, it's in place, then they would repeal that, and it would just be ongoing as a calculation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Starr.
I appreciate very much the discussion this session as it relates to creating a reserve fund. I think it's absolutely essential and critical for the financial health of our state that we do that. I don't expect that we're going to change the way we raise revenue in this state anytime soon, and based on a income tax model, it's critical that we have a reserve fund that is there, so when we do have the next recession, we don't have to live through what we lived through in 2002 with five special sessions. However, I'm going to oppose SGR 3. I don't believe that the corporate kicker is the way to fill a reserve fund. Just as we, I mean, Paul just mentioned, it's not a reliable, dependable source of funds for the reserve fund. It doesn't force, in my opinion, fiscal responsibility in the building. It's kind of us hoping and praying that the economy does really, really well, and then, you know, there'll be a corporate kicker, and maybe it gets, and then it gets put into a reserve fund. One of the principles that I have communicated to you and to this committee and to other colleagues is a form of forced fiscal discipline. And I don't believe the corporate kicker does that. So for that reason, primarily, but I also see this as a tax increase on business and small business in my district, and I've heard from them. Sure, we've had testimony from some of the larger business associations that they support a suspension of the kicker or a redirection of the kicker, but I don't think that the business representatives that we've heard here are indicative or representative of the entire business community, especially the small business community. In fact, Mr. Wilson, J.L. Wilson, representing NFIB, I think clearly told us that from the view of small business that the corporate kicker and the kicker that small business gets back is something that is important to those businesses and to our economy. I've heard from small community banks in my district where they've planned for having this, whether it's a $125,000 credit or a $250,000 credit, they planned on it because they knew that it was coming. And especially for a bank, that money gets rolled back into the economy, and you can multiply that 10 to 12 times. So for those reasons, Mr. Chair, I'm going to oppose this resolution this morning, though I do want to say I thank you and other members of this committee and the staff for all the work that has gone into both the crafting of this and other proposals, and I appreciate that. I think that's important. I'm concerned about the source of the funds that going into the kicker or into the reserve fund. Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
If I can make one point, because Senator Starr, and thank you for several of I know it might be small consolation, but many of the ideas, as we've had a relatively robust 2 or 3 week conversation about building reserve funds, this is probably small consolation, but in the coming bill and amendments,
I saw that.
Several of your ideas have been incorporated, including, at least at this point, the whole notion of a two-thirds at one time and 1% of general fund, which is not a 3% forced fiscal discipline, but it's a third of the 3%.
It's better than nothing, Mr. Chair. I was going to wait for the comments on that bill when we had it go in front of us, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's on its way. Okay, we'll go to Senator Monroe and then Senator Burdick. Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chair, do you want us to have the discussion on the bill now, or do you want to wait until after we've approved the amendment? It seems to me that technically we ought to approve the amendment and then have a discussion on the amended bill.
I'm fine with having discussion. The amendment has a great deal of what's going to be in the bill, but we can approve the amendment and then we're going to have to move the bill.
Parliamentary order, you debate what is before you. What's before us is the amendment, not the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I would ask us to go ahead and have our vote on the amendment and then further debate on the bill as amended.
And I will accommodate.
That's be the parliamentarian.
That's a good request. Senator Burdick, did you have questions?
That was exactly my comment, Mr. Chair.
It's regarding the amendment. So anything further on or questions on the dash to amendments to SJR 3? Barbara, I think we'll have you call the roll on the adoption of the dash to amendments to SJR 3.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
No.
Senator George.
Excused.
And Chair Decker.
I'm going to vote aye.
Surprise.
The dash two is adopted. Who would like to move the SJR as amended?
I'd be happy to. Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I move SJR 3 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
So Senator Burdick has moved SJR 3 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion.
Yes.
Senator Monroe.
Well, one thing that I want to make very clear is this is not a tax increase for business. Their rates will not increase under this measure. What it will do is prevent them from getting a 67% or more tax cut next year. So I think that's an important distinction. We heard from renowned economists that to not take this money and use it for some other purpose, but to give it back as a corporate kicker would be the greatest waste of this money that we could ever imagine. They said it was the worst possible use of this money would be to kick it back to corporations. We need a rainy day fund. This isn't sufficient for the rainy day fund that we need. So I will be supporting the chair in using end of session money or designated general fund money to supplement this amount of 275 to 300 million approximately, so that we can build this rainy day fund to the $1 billion or more that it needs to be. This is a good start, though.
Good comments. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to remind everyone that two-thirds of this money typically goes out of state, but one-third of it stays in state. And I just want to commend the people in the business community who were able to look past the immediate benefit of having some extra money in their pockets or in their members' pockets, in the case of business associations, and were able to look at the overall welfare and health of the state, specifically the education system, in supporting this amendment, this constitutional amendment, and also creation of the Rainy Day Fund. And I think my good colleague to my left here points out that the business community was not united on it. However, the business associations I heard from and the business associations who testified here do represent a good number of small businesses and a great diversity of business. And I think sometimes it's easy for us to say we need a rainy day fund and it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. But for the people who are actually standing to get the money to come forward and say, you know, the good of the state is really more important than my getting a special little payment this particular cycle. And I just want to commend them, and specifically Lynn Lundquist, who's sitting in the back there, who has been talking about this for my entire legislative career, both as a member of the legislature and now as the president of the Oregon Business Association. So I think it made the business community really impressed me on this one, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Yes. A good day for the former speaker, Lynn Lundquist, and you are correct. We have been in too many meetings for everyone's good with the business community, but several of them just have stepped forward and provided incredible leadership to guide the discussion for the state of why adequate reserves and what the proper role of the corporate community might be, and really taking a leadership position in terms of the corporate kicker being not part of that matrix that we have, which I really think we do have, which is a competitive environment for business taxation if you look nationally. But to me, and ultimately on this measure, the voters will be the judge of it, but the corporate kicker is not a part of that competitive tax environment for business. Senator Starr, do you want to weigh in, or
Mr. Chair? My comments on the amendment, since the amendment is basically the bill, I think suffice. Thank you, though.
Yeah, thank you. So we have Senator Burdick has moved SJR 3 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Seeing no further discussion, Barbara again will do the roll.
Okay, Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
No.
Senator George.
Excused.
Chair Deckard.
Votes aye. motion passes. Senator George will carry. I will carry the bill. Open a work session on Senate Bill 48. So, Paul, this is the companion to SJR 3 and creates the reserve fund and starts the process of filling it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The original Senate Bill 48 directed the corporate kicker into the capital fund of the Education Stability Fund. So this does amend that considerably. It still takes effect only with the passage of SJR 3, and it does provide where the surplus corporate kicker revenue will be deposited, but it establishes this rainy day saving account within the general fund, and then it spells out the characteristics of that fund. A couple things I'll point out. One is, if you look at the amendment, the -1 amendments, it does create the account within the general fund, and this is based on discussions with Treasury, and Darren Bond is here if there are any questions on how that would work in terms of cash management. But the idea is that this is an other fund account for budgetary purposes with its own triggers that have to be met before any is allocated. But in terms of cash flow management, it would serve as provide balances for the Treasury to manage the state's accounts, particularly those times when our cash flow is prevents the state from having large balances. money that is transferred into the fund come from ORS 291, which is the corporate kicker calculation, the statutory version of that. And then there's an additional source, which is defined as the ending balance. And this grew out of a discussion from a bill that was approved by the Senate last session, Senate Bill 841. It's similar to that. It defines an ending balance as the difference between revenues collected and appropriations made during a biennium. Deposit that goes into the account is made as soon as possible, is the language that's used, which we think the way we currently tabulate the budget is we know by the end of the calendar year what the expenditures were for the previous biennium, so 6 months later in effect. So that calculation could be done in the first calendar quarter following the biennium under our current practices, and up to 1% of general fund appropriations would be transferred into the rainy day savings account during that time period. And if there is less than 1%, the full amount is contributed to the rainy day saving account. The account itself will have a cap of 10%, which is 10% of general fund revenue in the prior biennium. And once that cap is reached, the money will flow into an education capital construction account, and education is defined as public education. So it would be a general capital account for all public education. The triggers for getting funds out of the regular account are similar to the Education Stability Fund triggers, but there are some differences. It does refer to the budgetary triggers. A and C are actually budgetary triggers. A, if the general fund forecast when you're in session shows that revenue will be 3% less than current appropriations, you can go into the fund. If payroll employment declines for 6 months, which is designed to reflect a measure of recessionary conditions, you can go into the fund. And if the forecast falls by 2% or more, if any of these triggers are met, you can withdraw money from the fund with a majority vote. The other trigger is if the governor declares an emergency, you can, and unrelated to these other triggers, you can withdraw money from the fund with a 3/5 vote. And as was mentioned earlier in discussion with Senator Starr, is that there is a restriction on the amount that can be withdrawn. No more than 2/3 of the amount of the savings account can be withdrawn in any one biennium. Again, this measure does not take effect if SJR 3 is not approved at the polls. And It does, because it is, it regulates or it affects a tax credit, it cannot have an emergency clause on it. So it takes effect 91 days after sine die.
Questions for Paul on the amendment?
Motion.
I'd like a motion, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, before we get a motion, could I ask one question?
Yes.
On the, if it can't take effect until 90 days after sine die, do we have a case where we've got the money going into a rainy day fund and the rainy day fund doesn't exist yet? What happens to the money in the interim if there is an interim?
Senator Burdick, the my interpretation of this is that the first calculation will be done following the 709 biennium in terms of the ending balance calculation. So you would have normally what happens in terms of the 2% surplus kicker calculation, it is done in August following the biennium. Usually corporations are notified sometime around Labor Day that they have a credit coming to them for the 07 tax year. So we're not actually going to have any dollars affected by that decision technically until after the 07 tax year is completed. So there wouldn't be any dollars flowing in from the kicker. The ending balance calculation would be done following the 07-09. So we would anticipate that happening sometime in the first quarter of 2010.
Okay.
So it should, the fund should be in place, the timing should work. I did, by the way, make a calculation on that first transfer, just based roughly on the governor's recommended budget. The governor's appropriation level, you take 1% of that, would be $138.4 million. So, and the governor does project a $145 million ending balance. So 138 of that 145, in effect, would be put into the fund in the first quarter of 2010 if all of these numbers turn out to be accurate. But, of course, we'll see a legislatively adopted budget that will have a different ending balance level. And then, of course, we'll ultimately see what the ending balance actually turns out to be. If revenue comes in above projections, then you'd end up with a bigger ending balance.
Okay. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 48.
Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 48 discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'm going to support the dash one amendments. Now, Senator Murillo's got me all confused about when do I talk on a bill? Do I talk about it after we adopt the amendment, or can I talk about it now?
We'll get the amendment just to clear it up. Okay, so any objections to the dash one being adopted to Senate Bill 48? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Starr.
Thank you. I'm gonna support Senate Bill 48 for a couple of reasons. One, there are a number of things that are in this bill that I really like. The one piece that I have a problem with is it's the connection to SGR 3 and the corporate kicker piece, and that's in Section 5 sub 1. But ultimately, I'm going to trust the voters of Oregon, and if the voters of Oregon decide that they want the corporate kicker to be put in a reserve fund, then so be it. So based on that, that caveat, the voters will have the opportunity to decide. So I'm going to trust their judgment and wisdom on that. And then Section 5 sub 2 is the 1%, and I think that's better than nothing, Mr. Chair. And I do have a concern, however, that, again, the ending balance, to a certain extent, can be manipulated by actions by the board. But history, I think, shows that there is money at the end of a biennium, and, Mr. Lundquist has done a fabulous job of advocating for this particular route of building a reserve. So for that, I appreciate the work of Mr. Lundquist, and the 1% I think is a good start. Mr. Chair, I also appreciate the two-thirds limitation on pulling money out of the reserve. If you looked at what we lived through in 0103 and 0305, having the ability to take money out in the first biennium and then having some more money left there for the second biennium, clearly that was necessary. And you know, as we look forward, legislators that are going to sit in these chairs in years when we're all gone, I think it's important that we have that particular piece in the bill. So for those reasons, Mr. Chair, I'm going to support Senate Bill 48, and I appreciate the work that you and others have done to get us to this point.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, this measure has been carefully crafted with negotiations between our chair and members of the House and the business community and the governor's office. It's very balanced. The one thing I particularly like about it is that it's very tight in terms of the ability of future legislatures to access the money. That is absolutely critical. There are some conservative radio talk show hosts out there who say that if you create this rainy day fund, that the greedy legislature will just grab it for whatever purpose. Clearly, that can't happen. It can only be accessed if there is a severe downturn, a recession, or if a supermajority of legislatures and the governor find a compelling need for it. And under no circumstances can they take more than two-thirds of it in any one biennium. That, even if 100% of the legislature wants to, and the governor, they can't take more than two-thirds. So this is airtight. It's very conservative in the way it's written, and it will protect the state from the most severe consequences of future downturns.
Thank you. This almost seems choreographed. Senator Burdick, any comments or...
Good bill should pass.
Darren, I do. We do have one question. If you're available to answer questions, and Paul, you may want to weigh in.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasurer.
So the question is, and we had discussed interest earnings, and I think John Marshall, who now with AOI, formerly OSBA, had raised it yesterday, too, in terms of interest earnings, how are those dealt with? We had discussed it, this, Paul, I know, about a week ago, and are those included in the when this larger fund now earns interest, how will that interest be treated?
It'll accrue to the general fund, Mr. Chair.
It'll accrue to the general fund.
All accounts that don't have statutory authority to retain their own interest, the interest accrues to the general fund, and that is in statute.
Okay, so that's something that do you have any recommendations on the question of interest and where the interest should go, or?
Mr. Chair, I support the language of the bill relative to interest accrual. You definitely want it to go to the general fund. You don't want the account to retain its own interest. Then it has to be treated as a separate account. The balances have to be held separate from a cash perspective. We're not talking about the budget perspective and the use of the funds. But if it's set up as an account in the general fund, then it supports ongoing general fund deficits. And as we've seen and discussed over the years through the changes to the general fund and the different uses of the general fund now supporting education and corrections, we have a structural cash flow deficit in our general fund. So that forces the treasurer to go out routinely and borrow to support that deficit. If we're going to create a large reserve of cash to support general fund appropriations in a time of need, then it only makes sense that we use that cash to hopefully, if it gets large enough, eliminate the need for that cash flow borrowing and eliminate those costs the state incurs undertaking that borrowing. If you wanted it to get earnings, then you could always statutorily create a process where some portion of interest that accrues to the general fund, some portion being any or all of it, is directed to the rainy day fund as another source of revenue to build the fund. That would be our recommendation.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Bond?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
So a legislature would have to appropriate that interest money back into the rainy day fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, I'm not a budget guy. I believe that you could take a statutory action to continuously appropriate interest revenues that flow to the general fund to the rainy day fund.
Good. I'd like to do that.
Mr. Chair, that's I appreciate that. That surprises me, this piece of news. I would think that the interest on the fund would accrue just automatically staying in the fund. Mm-hmm. And I can understand, you know, once the fund hit the 10% cap, that the interest would roll maybe into the general fund, or the way this bill would be written, I would think it would roll into the education capital, what is it called? What capital construction account. That would be what I would prefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, if I might. Once we have to dedicate the balance, set the balance aside to pay an interest, its balance has to have integrity as a cash bucket, if you will, in the general fund. For all intents and purposes, once you create, you know, it's already set aside as another funds account in the general fund. Once we say it earns interest, it loses its general fund flavor from a cash perspective. So there are, again, other ways by directing the income back into this account where we can keep that general fund flavor and eliminate those needs for cash flow borrowing. And that's what we're advocating. One side advantage of directing, depending on how it's structured, there's the potential that you could eliminate the interest income going into the kicker calculation. And if that was the case, then you eliminate a pro-cyclical feature of the kicker, which tends to only build, you know, increased kickers, and the interest revenue flows out. So this way it would be retained in an account for the benefit of the rainy day fund.
For the benefit of or what Senator Starr is suggesting is once it hits that cap, you could use the interest to fill the capital account, which is already created, and just by chance we were just discussing.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think by default, once it gets that big, all revenues go there. So, yeah.
Great. So, Mr. Chair, do we need an additional amendment to continually appropriate interest back into the rainy day fund?
Well, yeah, I think what we'll do is, and I'm glad, thank you for Mr. Craven and Mr. Marshall for at least flagging this for our discussion today. I think what we'll do, because I don't see many here, they'll break their neck if we ask for another amendment on this bill, but we'll flag this one part for discussion, and as we have a week or two to move over to the House, we'll flag this one issue and include the Treasurer's Office. Paul.
Mr. Chair, we do have a bill draft request in dealing with general fund interest earnings. So, in general, that issue. We have a bill on the House side that deals with interest earnings for higher ed, and then you have a bill draft request in for a committee bill that deals with the issue of general fund interest earnings and how they're treated. So you have two other vehicles for dealing with that as well.
Good point. So we can always deal with this. Correct. It's always tighter to deal with it in one when you're... if it was possible in 48, and we can keep that option open, but we also have the option of simply dealing it with another bill. Other questions for Senator Starr?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just what we're proposing in Senate Bill 48 as amended would be a statutory, some statutory language as it relates to the reserve fund, a rainy day fund. That doesn't prohibit a legislature down the road passing another statute to bypass this particular one, correct?
That is correct.
So that's, for me, that's a cautionary note. So
it's a good point. We've discussed a great deal whether you memorialize this in the Constitution at some point to put the tightest test upon it, and also the whole discussion around how easy is it to even access a statutory fund when it isn't raining. This session, for example, would not be.
All you would need is a notwithstanding ORS, whatever this ends up being,
and you have that amount.
You got the money, so that's the caution, I think, moving forward.
It is a much discussed caution is on that, and I think there should and look forward to a good discussion of once you created this fund and it actually, if voters agree and you start to accumulate money, if that's something we would want to include in a constitutional question, just to ensure that mm-hmm. notwithstanding, hopefully wouldn't be done, but just to ensure that it wouldn't be done. Other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any objection to it being in the Constitution, but I guess I do have a little bit of a concern. You know, we know that this legislature is a bunch of honorable people that wouldn't do something like that. But to imply that some future legislature would be less honorable, I don't know. You know, we're all elected by the voters, and we make hopefully responsible decisions. And I guess I'm just a little nervous because of some of the folks out there that are constantly bashing us and saying that we're not responsible people and we don't make good decisions and we can't be trusted. Well, if we can't be trusted, then democracy can't be trusted because we're the product of democracy.
And Senator Monroe, that was the other side of the debate on Senate Bill 48 is, and decent research backs up your point of view is that actually legislators are not anxious to get into what is a pretty airtight with economic triggers in print to show what a recessionary environment would look like. And so to do that, to actually access it, you have to, and you're not in that recessionary environment, then you would have to be really violating the words that are in statute by putting that notwithstanding down. And at least in other states, they have, the research that we did has shown that they're not willing to, especially when you put those economic triggers into place.
And I do absolutely support continually appropriating interest back into the rainy day fund. I think that's something that we can support no matter what party we're, that's an appropriate and prudent way to do it. It's the way the voters would expect us to do it. I'm sorry it's not actually in this draft, but we'll have other vehicles and we'll get that done.
Other discussion? The motion is to move Senate Bill 48 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Stark, would you like to carry? I'm happy to do it. 48.
Okay.
In the spirit of
has
some
Thank
of
you.
Your authorship in mm-hmm. included in the bill. Okay, so Senator Stark will carry that bill. Paul, I think we have at this point concluded our chores. So we have scheduled the elections bill for Monday at 10 a.m. It is quite possible, and we'll try to get word out this afternoon or tomorrow, that we will just do that on Tuesday and not meet as a committee on Monday unless our lawyers say that we have to do it by Monday. If not, so we'll get word out if Monday's going to be canceled for President's Day. Or if we do meet, it'll be at 10 a.m., which is on the schedule now. If not, our next meeting would be 8:45 on Tuesday. Thank you. We are adjourned.
We really don't have much
Thanks.
On Tuesday.
Okay. Thanks, Jimmy.
If we don't have the election bill, we don't have a lot on Tuesday.
Don't we have three bills?